and gentlemen, it is hockey night in New York. Thank you and welcome to the program, everyone. It is Sunday, March 18th, 2018, coming at you live from the Hockey Active Studios on Long Island. Got another big show coming up for you tonight. Dan Saraceni of Lighthouse Hockey will be joining us to talk this this Misery Deluxe saga known as the New York Islanders that is just spiraling and spiraling down to the depths of the bottom of the NHL between now and the first week of April. My name is Sean Cuthbert. With me as always is Tony Stabile. Tony, how you doing, brother?
You're much happier than I am, pal. Let me tell you.
I'm trying, man.
You're much happier than I am.
I'm trying. Wow. I'm trying. Hey, wow. Man.
What a...
You got to do your best, you know. What, it's just sports, bro. What, it's just hockey.
Yeah, right.
It's just sports.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, what a couple of days, huh? Wow.
What a few days. Yeah, that win last week really turned things around
for
them. They went on a one-game winning streak. And now they have a new three-game losing streak since the last time we spoke here. You had the back-to-backs against Washington, which, they obviously had to win both if they wanted to, even give us false hope of, doing anything playoff-wise for the rest of the season. That didn't happen. Instead, they decided to surrender 13 goals to the Washington Capitals in the span of 48 hours. And here we are today, and the Carolina Hurricanes took a 4-3 win in regulation. And, but we can spin that as a positive because, the draft position is getting better and better by the game, Tony. Falling for Dolan.
Well,
it's happening.
And now Calgary is only, I think with their loss today to Vegas, they only have a 10% chance of making the playoffs.
There you go.
So you're going to have...
Hey, future's bright, man.
Future's more picks, bright. More lottery picks are on the way,
folks.
It's all
happening. It's all happening.
Well, they're on the way.
Yeah, so, I mean, not too many good things to talk about, unfortunately.
I don't think I can name more than one or, probably just one at this point.
Okay, what's that, Tony?
It's other than the Matt Barzal show, is there really anything else on this team that you can really be excited about at this point?
No.
Anything?
That's fair.
I mean, and it just seems, forget the losing, all right? The losing is bad enough, okay?
Okay.
But now we've been subjected to this ridiculous press conferences now that at some point or another, I never in my life thought I wish for a bland Jack Capuano post-game press conference. But now Doug Weight has now figured out a way to completely reverse that.
Well, look, I'm going to stop short of wishing for Jack Capuano press conferences back.
I sat through enough of them, bro.
Look, man. No, look. I was there too. But look, none of us want to be in that man's shoes right now, right? That's a terrible spot to be in. You come off another loss. You're gonna get the same questions. What went wrong? What's going on? And not to say that, he doesn't owe it to the media to answer these questions. He does, and that's why they do it. But I sure as shit don't want to be that guy after these games. Just lose. The morale is just dead. How are you going to answer these same questions every time? I said it, in previous shows now talking about Doug Weight and this whole situation. Like, I love Doug Weight, and, it sucks that, that this is how things have turned out. Obviously, I don't love the coaching aspect of the individual point.
That's an understatement.
But, it's unfortunate, but it sucks, man. He's got to come out after these, lackluster games. They come out, it's just not there, and the defensive problems are still there. My God, even look at the clips from tonight's game and what was it, the game-winning goal. I forget who it was. I think it was Van Riemsdyk. The guy had nobody near him. He was able to waltz in from the blue line, snap a shot, and there it is, 4-3, game over. It's just tough to watch because I think
how about Scott Darling? What about Scott Darling? Scott Darling has been probably one of the worst goaltenders in the NHL in the past, 9 months since the start of the season. He's got like an 890, 880 save percentage. He's the only goaltender worse than the Islander goaltender, statistics-wise. And And you know, they can't. You know, this huge high powered offense.
Look, man, they're playing out the string. You know, I mean, yeah, there's guys in there playing for pride, playing for a position next year and stuff like that, of course. And you know, I'm not going to accuse, you know, any of these guys of not being professionals and not looking to, you know, bring their best game every night. But look, they got nothing to play for. So, you know, you put yourself in those shoes and it's tough to get up for games like this because they're really just playing out the string. And I think this is the first time since we started doing this show, Tony, where, you know, they've reached a point before the end of the season where they had nothing to play for. At least last year, this time last year, they weren't in a playoff spot. But they were you know, in the middle of that winning streak, you know, making things interesting where they ended up missing by a point. So at least every game, you know, up until the end there meant something. But this is the first time now where it's just like, you know, what are we doing up there? You know what I mean?
So, yeah, no, I get it. Believe me.
And, I mean, now it's just numbers, right? You get Anders Lee getting his 34th and 35th goal tonight against Carolina. You know, career high for him. That's great. I don't know if you saw the clip today, but, you know, he scores his 35th. He ends up passing Mark Parrish for career goals as an Islander, and Parrish happens to be in between the benches there, and he gives him a little pound on his way. You know, I mean, these are like the small, tiny things. Oh, look at that we're looking at now in these games, right? Because everything else is just kind of garbage at this point. And you know, there's the stress of, you know, how this is going to weigh in John Tavares' mind as far as sticking around. I mean, it's not helping. I mean, you want to talk about just anything and everything going, you know, the complete wrong way with that whole situation. I mean, it's happened. It really has. I mean, this is aside from the Belmont announcement, that's obviously a plus and could help and stuff like that. But I mean, look, I am sure the vision, you know, coming from Gar Snow and Doug Waite and all that was, hey, look, we're gonna have a solid competitive season this year. We're gonna make the playoffs, and you know, regardless of how deep we go, you know, we get the arena and all that. You know, this is gonna keep Johnny here. And you know, if any of this ice on ice stuff is weighing on Johnny's mind right now, I mean, it's there's nothing positive to take out of it other than
no.
Barzal, like you said. I mean,
look, I don't know if you did you read Arthur Staples' column this morning in The Athletic?
This morning, no. Please enlighten us.
Well, it was about everyone's favorite topic. It was an interview with John Tavares, obviously about what's coming up and how everything has been going and so on and so forth. And John and Arthur made some really interesting statements in this article.
Do tell.
One of the, you know, I mean, obviously Johnny's not going to give anything away, but you know, this is the way that it is. Okay. If the fact that we're at this position right now goes to show you that there's more than a sliver of doubt whether or not he wants to stay here or not. Okay. Now, knowing John the way that he is and the way that he's, you know, portrayed himself since he's been here is that he wears being an Islander and being a part of the solution here as a very positive thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I weigh both of that, but the part that troubles me about this is that Brisson went to Scott Malkin, and Malkin has been meeting regularly with Brisson apparently
good.
Over the course of the last. He meets with him almost every time he's in Los Angeles.
Oh,
apparently
good.
He goes to Brisson's office.
Okay,
so he goes to. He's been meeting with him, but Brisson at some point or another last year told the Islanders that they were going to play out the season and, you know, and then make a decision after that.
Okay. I mean, we kind of assume that's what was going to
right.
happen.
Right.
Anyway.
And I mean, I don't think it had anything to do. I mean, look, if a player is going to come here, you know, is going to be here for 9 years and then look at just, the, you know, what's happening. There are, you know, there are plenty of negatives. There are plenty of positives, you know, but the way that Staple portrayed, you know, the whole thing was that they hired Waite because they knew he was tight with Johnny. Mm-hmm. They kept Snow and didn't make any changes because they knew he was tight with Johnny.
Right.
But now they're in a position where they think that they realize that they're going to have to make a change.
Oh, yeah.
Right at the point where they're going to try to – where he's going to have to make a decision. And, I mean, I don't know if it was because these guys just were not sure – how Tavares was going to react, you know, to a complete upheaval a year going into free agency or the year before free agency. But, I mean, I have to think that now, hindsight being 2020, that these changes would have looked a hell of a lot better last summer than they do right now. I mean, you know,
well,
you have a
yeah,
guy
in
gonna...
hindsight, but, you know, not knowing what would have happened this year. I mean, and there's really no point on really kind of trying to figure out what would have happened. You know, who knows if the new GM makes deals to improve the situation, to replace DeHaan, to replace Hamonic. You know, look, bottom line is we are where we are now. And I can give an understanding to the owners, you know, at that point in time and where their head was at. Like, okay, look, right now it seems like having Garth and Dougie here – improves our chances of keeping Johnny. So I get that. If you know, evidence kind of, you know, showed them that that was the case, then fine. I understand that. It obviously went completely south. It went completely the opposite direction
right.
they had hoped. And
right.
now, yes, Tony, they're absolutely in a position now where this regime has to go.
Yeah.
This I tweeted this Friday night after I got out of the movies because I saw the result of the game. I missed the game. I didn't watch it. And, you know, I saw the result and the score and everything. And, you know, you can make an argument that this statement, you know, could have been made even sooner, of course. But, you know, I was just like, I don't see any way that the owners can rationalize to themselves, you know, keeping this, you know, front office intact beyond game 82.
There's no, just, I think agree with you 100%.
I can't see a situation where they're looking at each other and being like, yeah, you know what? We'll give him another shot.
Yeah,
you
I don't
know?
Think so
I think
either.
It's done. It's over. And it has to happen. And I think the fans finally will speak with their wallets if Gar sticks around. I mean, obviously, if he does and JT signs, that'll help. And maybe people will be like, all right, let's see what happens. But I'll tell you what, if Garth stays and JT goes, the Barclays Center and the Coliseum maybe will be ghost towns
yeah.
next year.
But you see, this
nobody's going to show up.
And this is something that I thought the other day, and then Chris Botta actually put it to paper, which was really which was great. He said that he basically said in so many words, and not in his words, but what he was saying was that John Ledecky's silence right now is deafening. The fact
yeah,
that he
man.
Is not front and center on any of these things, to him, that means that they're working behind the scenes.
I think they are. I
they
really
have to
do.
Because he every time he would put his face in front of the camera, every time that question would come up.
Yeah.
You know, are you going to make a change? Is Snow safe? Is this and the best thing to do at this point is just to do exactly what he's doing.
Yeah,
just to get out
sure.
from out in front of the cameras.
Absolutely.
Do your thing, and
absolutely.
Then at the end of the season, just cut it off, and that's
yeah.
the end
and,
of it.
And we'll pick that up, but and we'll even talk to Dan about it. But we got to take a quick break because Dan's going to join us in a couple minutes. So, folks, thank you so much for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York, part of the Hockey Active Radio Network. Remember, you can always tune in live. Or for the archives at RadioHockeyActive.com. We're going to take that break. We'll be right back.
If you're interested in exposing your business on an exciting new platform to a great audience of potential new customers or clients, then advertise right here on the Hockey Active Radio Network. Reach thousands of listeners every week on our entire radio, social, and online network. Competitive, affordable sponsorships are available now. Contact sales at HockeyActive.com. That's sales at HockeyActive.com. Introduce your business or services to the coolest fans in the world. In need of solid online solutions for your business or service? Then contact Island Web Media today for all your hosting, branding, web design, social, and multimedia needs. With over 15 years of experience in the industry and on top of all the latest trends and platforms, you will get the answers that you need. Island Web Media is an American company based in Long Island, New York. Go to islandwebmedia.com today. That's islandwebmedia.com. The Hockey Active Radio Network is powered by Hockey Active LLC in Long Island, New York. Hockey Active is always looking for good people to join us as we expand our audience reach and network services. If you have digital, video, social media, and sales skills, go to HockeyActive.com today. Call or send us an email and see how you can get involved with an exciting new company covering the coolest game on earth. Once again, that's HockeyActive.com.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to Hockey Night in New York, part of the Hockey Active Radio Network. Join us now from Lighthouse Hockey, Mr. Dan Saracini. Dan, you're talking to Tony and Sean. How you doing, buddy?
All right, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're great. We are great.
Thanks for asking, pal.
Everything is wonderful.
Yeah.
Especially when we talk about our beloved New York Islanders.
Yeah.
And Dan, I have to say, I know, you know, in general, over the course of the last couple of months, you know, it's not been a lot of good things to say on Twitter, but I have noticed from you over the last week or two that your misery has kind of reached new depths. And you've kind of shared your feelings towards the team out loud on your Twitter feed.
Yeah.
I found it pretty amusing.
I can't say I'm totally proud of all that, but at the same time, like, you know, if you're not going to use Twitter to, you know, or whatever to say what you really feel, then there's really no point, right? So
sometimes you just got to let it out, you know?
Yeah.
You just got to share. So with that in mind, Dan, and you know, where this team has spiraled to this point, you know, where does that have you? What's your thoughts here? We got potentially some big decisions coming up, maybe within even the next couple of weeks, depending on what happens after game 82. What's your overall look here on what might happen, you know, going forward with this franchise?
Well, I mean, the overall look is not good. and you know, the thing about it is that, and I mean, you mentioned my Twitter feed, and the thing I keep trying to get back to is that it's not even so much about this season. Like, this season has obviously been a complete disaster. I mean, everything that could have gone wrong obviously has. But the thing that makes it really, really awful is that this whole thing stretches back to last season, too. And you know, they came into, you know, what, unfortunately, you know, when John Tavares, your captain and your best player, is going to be a free agent, the story started last year. And, you know, I mean, we'll talk about the running, encyclopedia I've been keeping for the last 2 years, but that's the way it's been. People have been waiting for this moment where he's going to be a free agent, and you had this time with him. So why not make the most of it? And, I mean, to put it mildly, the Islanders have not made the most of it. They've made the least of it. They're going to miss the playoffs for a second straight season. You know, there have been highlights. I mean, certainly Matt Barzal has been the best part of this entire season. Jordan Eberle's had a great season. I mean, it's a shame that
absolutely.
He's not going to be in the playoffs, but I mean, he can't, that, you know, for all the complaints we all have about Garth Snow, and believe me, there are many, and they're all, most of them are pretty legitimate. You know, acquiring Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strom was brilliant, and Eberle has been nothing short of fantastic. But, you know, and Ryan Pulock has been really good too, all things considered. But, like, other than that, and the Belmont news obviously was big too.
Yes.
But other than those things, which, you know, can only take you so far, the last two seasons have been a complete disaster. And exactly everything that could have possibly – the exact opposite of what you hope to have happened during this run-up to Tavares' free agency.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what Tony and I were saying just before we brought you on the show. And, you know, you talk about, you know, Garth Snow and his failures and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of straws that have been added to that camel's back over the last few years.
Yeah.
But I think this season, with, you know, just the weight of what this summer was bringing with John Tavares, I mean, just his just absolute failure to supplement this team. And there's so many points in time that start from the summer, not even you know, when the season got started. You know, Phil and Hammond spot, then Phil and DeHaan when he got hurt, then Boychuk going with it. I mean, this guy had, you know, you have milestones here over the course of the year where he had a chance to you know, do something, you know, not only to show Johnny and the team, hey, look, I'm here for you guys, I'm going to try to, you know, salvage this season, but just, you know, knowing what's coming down the pike. I mean, this failure, I think, is the log that breaks the camel's back now. You know, looking back now,
is.
I mean, it's, So, I mean, I was saying it just before, too. They got to go. Garth Snow's got to go. I mean, are you in the same mindset at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how. And, you know, in fairness, like, it's taken me a long time to get to this point because I feel like, you know, giving people as many chances as possible. But, I mean, I don't know how you miss the playoffs in back-to-back seasons with Tavares, whether Tavares stays or goes. I don't know how you miss, you know, the playoffs and back-to-back seasons with this much, you know, importance on them and keep your job. Like, I get, like, you know, I mean, a lot of Garth's tenure, and he's been in the job for 12 years, and a lot of it was under incredible financial constraints under Charles Long that nobody really would have succeeded in. I mean, maybe somebody would have, but that's a tough road. And then, you know, they had a couple of good seasons there and just couldn't get over the hump, and then now we're here, and it's like, he 8 years ago, we were promised a rebuild. And we were going to be like, okay, well, they're going to stink for a while, but they got this number one overall pick. They got this guy Tavares. They got all these other guys that are going to be good and be the core of the team going forward. And most of those guys are gone. Tavares now is under the gun. And they're right back to where they were, which is just a playoff team that it's not even close. You know, I mean, you watch them, and I mean, they just finished losing this game to the Carolina Hurricanes, who are also a non-playoff team. And it, I mean, the game, it wasn't close, but like, it, I mean, they lost 4-3, so the score was close. But I mean, you watch that team, it's like these defensive miscues. The game-winning goal was scored by a guy who had has two. There was his second goal of the season. He had gone 40-something games without a goal, and there wasn't anybody within six feet of him. How is that possible?
No, it was awful. And to make it even worse, Dan, is that, you know, going into the year, this team had a foundation for a playoff team. It's not like, you know, we were asking Gar Snow to move mountains here, you know, in order to, you know, add half a roster to make this team playoff competitive. All we had to do was find a couple pieces here, a couple pieces there. And yes, there's always the argument of there's got to be a willing partner. There's got to be somebody willing to make the deals. But, you know, you look around the league, GM's got it done. You know, you can start with Ray Shiro. You look elsewhere too. Look, I'm sure there's deals that he could have made. He was gun shy for whatever reason. He wasn't willing to do this, that, or the other thing. But sometimes you just got to pony up, especially when your franchise's player's future is hanging in the balance. So I think it just makes it look even worse because of how close this team was, you know, and he still failed to do anything, really anything at all, to just, you know, improve the chances of this team getting into the playoffs.
It's been a weird thing with Snow because you know, earlier in his tenure, he was the guy that was always on the waiver wire and picking guys up and making these, you know, he didn't make one move in the offseason. He would make half a dozen moves and, you know, take chances on these guys and flyers on these, you know, free agents that you never heard of because they felt that guy had something to prove and was given a shot. And, you know, we all know the list, Molson, Parenteau, Grabner. You know, Brad Boyce had a good season with the Islanders that half season, you know, the lockout season where they made the playoffs. Like, these are guys that you just took a flyer on. And, you know, Thomas Hickey was one of those guys. And they turned Thomas Greiss was one of those guys, even though his season was one of the key reasons why they've been bad this year. But, like, those days are kind of over. Like, and so, the you know, it's almost like they were very satisfied with their roster. And Snow always says, I'm happy with this group. I believe in our group. And that's fine and good, but you don't just stop acquiring good players. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning are arguably the best team in the league, or one of the best teams in the league, and they're signing free agents. They just signed a kid who's like the leading scorer in the Quebec Major Junior League because he was an undrafted player, and this guy's leading their league in scoring. Well, give him a shot. Maybe he never turns out to be anything, but you know, just because they have a bunch of, you know, a roster that's full of good players doesn't mean they just stop all of a sudden. They have to keep on going. And you know, literally in the Islanders' case, they had guys dropping Boychuk and DeHaan, like you said, and they just never replaced them. Like, call up a guy from Bridgeport, and, you know, he would struggle out there, and they'd lose a game, and they'd be like, well, what are you going to do? Like, what do you mean, what are you going to do?
I agree with you 100%, Dan, but, you know, but it seems to me, and it's always been this way, but it seems more to me this year that he just expected these younger guys to just step into these roles. And I mean, he's always been in love with his prospects. He's always been in love with his draft picks and, you know, always, you know, pushing his own guys to step into these roles. But, I mean, you can't lose two of your top four defensemen and expect guys with, you know, 15, 20, 30 games of NHL experience,
if that,
to be playing 18, 19, 20 minutes a night. I mean, it's short-sighted. Right. And the other problem is that, you know, I know Thomas Hickey was the one that said, oh, we made structural changes within the, you know, our you know, the defensive scheme and the way we play. But they should have did that shit 3 months ago.
And
like, what
then,
are you waiting until February to do?
And then Snow had the balls to blame the DeHaan injury on the peril of the season. So go out and do something about it.
No, forget about that. But how about they blame DeHaan? And this is a guy that they didn't even think enough of to give him a multi-year contract to. They only gave him one freaking year deal. And they're saying, oh, the season's lost because we lost Calvin DeHaan. You're not even going to have him next year. And yet you're blaming the season going in the shitter because this guy went down with an injury? Come on.
There's a lot of lip service paid, and I referenced this on our podcast a few days ago. There was an article in the Athletic about how Tampa again has, like, you know, built this team up and has done all these things, and you know they're ones who, like, call a guy up from Syracuse and he, like, steps right into the lineup and he plays pretty well, and the Islanders try and do that too. But the difference is, like, Syracuse is really good. They're a really, really good AHL team, and so when you call a guy up from there, he's going to be a good player. He's going to already be in the structure. The Sound Tigers are not a good team. Like, they're going to miss the playoffs probably too this season. And so you call a guy up from there, and it's like, yeah, maybe he's okay, but you know, it's not like he's stepping out from one championship team to another. And so, like, you can say, oh, yeah, we're going to call a guy up and he's going to step right in, but it doesn't really work out that way. And it's just been incredibly frustrating, like you said. I mean, to not replace Jahan.
And usually in that case, when you are calling up one of those guys, they're coming up to fill a 5-6 role, not a 3-4.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Because they have depth. That's why.
Right.
Because they have a guy who can step into a 3-4 role.
Be the guy who's a 7 and he just rotates in every now and then.
What the Islanders do is they bring a guy back who shouldn't even be in the NHL, and then they give him that role. And when he can't figure it out. Yeah, and when he can't figure it out, you know, they're like, oh, all right, well, we'll put him in every third week, and then maybe people will forget how bad he is.
Let me ask you this,
Dan, because this has been bothering me too. You know, a lot has been made about Josh Hosang this year, and I don't think Josh was playing phenomenal when they sent him down. But really, in all seriousness, if you look at this team and the nightly defensive gaffes that have happened between the veterans, the younger players, or whatever, I mean, it happens on a nightly basis. How could you possibly, with a straight face, tell Josh Hosang that he's not doing the right thing with the puck? He's giving the puck away. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. And meanwhile, you got a whole fucking team that's doing exactly the same thing. What does that say to him? Like, you don't think this kid is watching the games, be like, oh, look, I did that and I got sent down, and this guy's, you know, playing 18 minutes a night.
Yeah. Again, it's all very strange, and it all comes off as being like lip service, you know, like we sent this guy down because he made a couple of really, really serious miscues in a game against the Rangers, like a high profile game. But then, it's not like the turnover was just stopped. I mean, you know, they keep going on. They're just different guys. And some guys just, you know, they're allowed to get away with it. And, you know, I mean, in Matthew Barzell's case, he's got the puck a lot and he's going to turn it over. And, you know, he turned it over in overtime against the Edmonton Oilers. And he sat for the rest of overtime and the shootout. And it's like, you know, I get that you're supposed to teach the guy that, you know, turnovers aren't supposed to. He knows that he's not supposed to turn the puck over there. And, like, by not playing him for the rest of overtime and the shootout, you're literally handicapping your team in a spot where they desperately need to win. And, I mean, I don't know if it would have really changed the situation they're in now if they won that game. But, you know, winning is certainly better than losing, that's for sure. And it's just – this has been an extremely frustrating season on so many levels, from ownership to management to coaching to players. There has been everything is just incredibly frustrating. And then again, like I said at the top, like if you add in the fact that this is the second straight season where this is kind of happening, it's mind blowing. It's mind blowing that we're in this position right now with this team that we can't even, you know, we're all sitting on pins and needles waiting to see what happens. Basically, we got 10 games, and then we have to sit and worry about John Tavares. Like, that's it.
That's the offseason. Exactly. For sure. And now that we've aired our grievances here, we've got the bad energy out.
Right.
You know, we talked about, we all seem to agree that it's time for the front office to be cleaned out here. That being said, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, what fans think about that particular scenario. Some people say, oh, they'll never do it. Other people say, yeah, you know, it can happen, whatever. So two-part question here for you. First one being, do you think the owners will go ahead and clean house because, as we all agree that they need to? And B, have you even thought far enough ahead to think about who you might want to see take Garth's place if that happens?
I mean, I think they do. Like, I don't think that, you know, I John Ledecky is at all these games and he sees these people and he's on, you know, I feel like they're in the know enough to think that they have to do this. And then, you know, we know that Garth has this really long contract, and I don't know if there's going to be like a buyout or something, but these guys are shelling out $1 billion for a new arena that you can't possibly come into the season next year with these same guys. And I know we said that, probably a lot of people said that last year too, like, you know, we can't come into the season without John Tavares signed, and yet here we are. So, I mean, if let's put it this way, if this front office is still in charge next season, I mean, they're in for a world of pain. Like, if you thought that, you know, 10,000 people was a paltry amount of attendance at Islanders games, wait until the same group comes back and you start getting 6,000, 8,000, you know, like, it's not even, who's going to care? Like, who's going to even be around? I'm all for having hope, but I mean, give me a break. How many years now do we need to do this? As far as replacements go, Craig Custance at the Athletic had a list of, you know, guys that are up for, you know, possibly being the next one. Bill Guerin, Tom Fitzgerald were two names that pop out because they're old Islanders. Paul Fenton and Mike Fuda, who are, you know, assistant GMs forever. look like they could be in there. But a lot of these guys have turned down the Carolina Hurricanes job within the last couple of days. Some of them are going to the playoffs and they don't want the distraction. Some apparently according to Nick Kiprios Sports Set, the Hurricanes aren't offering a lot of dough and these guys are like, oh, I'm not going to go there for, you know, that little money. So, it's not like you just call up a guy, you know, and get a GM over the phone. So I don't know. I would like to see somebody come in and this is another, like, you know, lip service type of thing, but this team needs a culture change. Like, they literally just need an entirely new group of people to come in and be like, no, we're doing things differently. Like, what was working before isn't working. Like, what we were doing isn't working, and we need to start from the ground up. And how that affects John Tavares, I don't know. But this team desperately needs new blood, and I don't just mean, you know, firing the coach and replacing him with the next guy down the bench. Like, they need an entire overhaul, or else people just aren't going to care.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I read that article. I like the idea of Bill Guerin getting a shot. You know, you look at guys like Dean Lombardi, who have successfully won a Stanley Cup and built a team that was a contender for a year round. But you know, you have a guy like Guerin who has been through a lot in Pittsburgh. He was there when Shiro was there. He's now there with Rutherford. He's seen, two guys who really kind of know how to put a team together. So, and he's got the Long Island thing. And honestly, his tenure at the Islanders, came to an end with Snow. I mean, look, there's got to be a little satisfaction there, too, taking a spot and being able to do something that the guy before you and the reason you're not weren't there anymore or, unceremoniously left. That would probably be, something that, someone could, a competitive guy would look at also. So,
The only reason that one jumps out to me because you don't have to sell him on the whole Long Island thing. Like, he knows he gets it. He signed up there in the first place. And then at that point, too, like, even if the owners wanted to, and I'm not saying they would do this, but, like, even if they just wanted to do what the Hurricanes did with Ron Francis, which is, quote, unquote, promote him to a different job that's not general manager, that's really not much of a promotion, and just kind of keep him on the payroll and keep him around. I mean, I can kind of see that, Garth ends up being just president and then Guerin takes over as general manager. But then at the same time, like, who's really in charge? So I wouldn't want to see that. I can kind of see that happening. And I might be like, well, it's not the culture change I was looking for, but at least it's somebody with a new voice to come in here and do something. And again, he's got the connection, Tom Fitzgerald too. You'll know that goes back a long time. And it's just, they need somebody to come in and be like, you guys are totally doing this wrong. Like, we need to actually start looking at things in a different way. Because it just ain't working clearly in 2 years of this. It just isn't working.
No, absolutely. And final thing, I promised you that I'd ask you about this because this is one of your favorite topics to talk about other than the Islanders, we got our first look at Avengers Infinity War. So what did you think? What do you think of the trailer?
I think it's great. I kind of like the teaser a little bit better because I like how it ended with Thor saying, who the hell are you guys? And the Guardians of the Galaxy show up. Whether the trailer was good or bad, I'm excited. I've seen Black Panther twice. My sister-in-law hasn't seen it. We just had dinner with them, and she hasn't seen it. I'm like, you haven't seen it? I'll go see it again. Like, we'll just go. I'll go see it a third time because I loved it that much. I'm just really interested to see how the story works out because it's going to be split into two movies and see how they integrate all these characters. And I just love all the humor. I love that they mine Doctor Strange's name for humor because it's the stupid. I love Doctor Strange, but it's so funny that this guy is Doctor Strange. Meanwhile, that's just his name. It's a very weird thing. But I'm excited and hopefully I hope it's good. I'm sure it will be. I mean, they haven't really had a bad one yet. But I just want to see. I'm just dying to see what the story is because I want to see what
I am
do
too,
this,
man.
Where it
is. The speculation is killing me because that's where it's been killing me with the who goes and who's what and whatever. So I'm
I don't want to read. I do this with Star Wars too. I never read any like reviews. I mean, I know I'm going to see.
No, me either.
Meaningless. I don't want to know the story. I want to go in fresh and watch it and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Dan. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing your grief with us. We're suffering right there with you.
Thank you
we look forward to having you
on
again
Twitter,
next time.
I appreciate it. No problem. Anytime.
All right, Dan. Thanks a lot. Take care. Right.
Thanks, Dan.
Bye.
All right, folks, from Lighthouse Hockey, that was Mr. Dan Saraceni. And some funny stuff in there. At least you can laugh, right, when things aren't going so well,
you
know?
You have to.
Yeah, you do. You do. You do.
Dan's a good guy to do it with because he's got a tremendous sense of humor, considering that, you know. And if this is, and we know Dan a long time. He's been a friend of the show for a long time. We've been having him on pretty much since the beginning. And I knew, you know, I knew Dan through Twitter beforehand. And he's a great guy, but his level of frustration at this point is the highest that I've ever seen it before. And that's saying something. You know, considering that all this franchise has been through over the years, and to see him and the point that he's at right
now.
There's
a lot of anger in those 280 characters
right
now. Yeah,
there is. You know? Every single one of them.
Yeah.
From one to the end.
And, you know, they're merited. They're merited. But so let's continue with the, you know, trash on the franchise conversation here.
That's all we have left, so why not?
So just before, you know, we brought Dan on, and, you know, we were kind of talking with him about it. And, you know, I guess... you know, we were talking about what the owners might be doing right now. You know, you were talking about how, you know, Ledecky being silent, you know, kind of in the shadows right now, whereas, you know, we've known him to be right out in the forefront, you know, shaking hands with all the fans on the train and at the Atlantic Terminal and in the arena, you know, and which is great. You know, that's good. It's nice to see. And, yeah, the fact that he hasn't been around, I mean, granted, I'm sure he's not a, you know, he doesn't hate himself, so why would he put himself in that position? Because people are just going to throw garbage at him at this point. But, you know, yeah, maybe there's a little more to the silence than just protecting his well-being is that, yeah, you know, I would not be surprised in the least. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, what him and his partner Malkin do right now are they're on the phones. They're reaching out and they're saying, hey, look, who wants the job? You know, I mean, in a perfect world for me, you know, hopefully this isn't just wishful thinking. But as soon as, you know, the final buzzer sounds, you know, at the end of that last game of the season, what, April 7th or 8th, whatever it is, that, you know, not too long after that, we're going to get some kind of announcement that this franchise is going to take a different direction, because it's time, man, you know.
Yeah.
And we've talked about, you know, that there are some good things that Garza has been able to do over the years and stuff like that. But it's time, man. It's time.
Yeah.
The writing is,
you know,
on the wall. This is it. It's got to happen. And, you know, Dan brings up the interesting idea of maybe shifting Garza into a different position. I personally
I don't think that's
a good idea.
No. And I don't think anybody will take the job with him looking over the shoulder of being there.
Unless they were completely reassured that whatever position that ends up being
will have no impact. It would be like
on
the Milbury
guy.
What did
doing.
They do? They Charles
yeah,
took
they just
Milbury.
Said, okay,
and
you're a VP
community
now.
Affairs,
yeah,
or
whatever the
business
case.
Development or some
right.
Whatever.
And I could see them doing that only because of this golden parachute thing, where they might be like, look, if we're gonna give this guy another, I don't know, whatever he's getting paid. Let's just say, for argument's sake, he's getting $5 million. If we're gonna pay this guy another $5 million for the next 3-4 years, he's gonna do something for us. Right, you know, he's gonna justify that money somehow. So yeah, maybe they send him scouting out in Scandinavia or in Serbia or something like that. You know, whatever.
Right.
Maybe something like that. Who knows? But you know, it's time, man. It's just gotta happen. And you know, I'm curious to, you know, you talked about Garen and Fitzgerald. I'm curious to get your thoughts on you know, where you want to go, assuming that there is a replacement to be made here. You know, are you looking for somebody with experience to come in like a Dean Lombardi, or are you willing to give fresh blood a chance like Bill Guerin and Tom Fischel? In my personal opinion, I don't know. because
way to take a stand, Sean. That's great.
Well, no, because look, you know, if I'm like erring on the side of caution here, I would say you go with a guy with pedigree like Lombardi, because he's proven that he can do it.
Yeah.
Because, if you know, when you look at a guy like Garen, oh, that's cool, former Islander, great career, all that. Mm. You know, A, we've come to learn that doesn't necessarily always lead to success.
No.
B, because they've never had the job before, who the hell knows what they're going to do when they take over? Does the idea of having a Garen or Fitzgerald step in sound nice? Yeah, sure, that sounds really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm a little concerned over, you know, just kind of getting – you know, the GM version of Doug Wade Part 2.
Well, there's two.
You know what I mean?
There's two schools of thought on this. There's the Garth Snow school of thought, where you take somebody who has no experience whatsoever and you make him a manager.
By extension, the Charles Wong school of thought, where I'm not paying anybody. You know, I'm not paying anybody with experience to come in and take over the head coach.
He wanted
job.
Somebody who can control. That was the thing, and Neil Smith wasn't letting
him
control him. And then
I imagine that was some part of it, but I'm pretty sure that the reason why the Islanders were hiring inexperienced, you know, no experienced NHL coaches with the exception of Ted Nolan was because Charles Monk didn't want to pay the man.
Oh, that's for sure.
I am pretty sure that there was nobody with any sort of clout, you know, with NHL coaching experience that had a chance of coaching this team then because Wong wasn't going to pay them.
Well, I think it also has to do with the fact that he knew he can control, and Milbury has even admitted to this, that, you know, the idea for the DiPietro contract wasn't even his, but he wanted to keep his job so bad that Charles said, well, what about this? And he was like, okay, that could be a good idea. Okay, no problem. You know, like, so, you know, I mean, it wasn't not the DiPietro contract, the Yashin contract.
Oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Because
Garth did the
and that wasn't even Garth. It was actually Wong went over his head and did it basically directly with DiPietro anyway.
Sure.
But anyway, the point is that, you know, so I think that Charles had the idea that he liked, you know, just people, you know, would just say, okay, that sounds like a great idea. And I don't think he was getting that with Neil Smith.
Well,
and
obviously.
And I think he listened to Pat LaFontaine is what it is. I think that LaFontaine pushed him to say, you need to hire, an experienced general manager. You need to let him hire a coach and then, you know, do that and then move on and kind of take it from there. And I think that's the reason why LaFontaine left, like, in a huff, because it was, hey, this is my idea. I told you to do this and you're completely ignoring me. Why am I here? But the point is,
yeah, get to where you're
right,
going.
But the point of the matter is that I like the idea of a guy that comes in from an organization that is, you know, he's been an assistant general manager, he's been on both sides of been on the ice, been in the front office, been with successful general managers. Obviously, Guerin and Fitzgerald have done that, mm-hmm. Working with Pittsburgh. You look at Steve Yzerman. And Steve Yzerman learned under Ken Holland and then went to Tampa Bay. And, you know, he had a little bit of a rough go with it the first year or so. But he figured that out pretty quick. And you look in to see what the
team
is. He's
like the model GM right now.
He is the model GM. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit. But if you take someone that has actual experience in an organization that has done it correctly, you know, and you look at Pittsburgh, and as much as you don't want to, you know, as an Islander fan, want to admit it, Pittsburgh is a model organization when it comes to construction of their roster and getting,
absolutely,
you know, prospects and trading away picks and prospects the right amount. You know, like, you have a team like the Rangers that trade, you know, they trade all of their draft picks and then they have nobody and they can't understand why they don't have any prospects. And then you have a team like Pittsburgh that every year seems to be churning out another prospect or another high end guy that they can either
guys
turn
that
into
you've
a
never
guy
heard
ice,
of, but they end up contributing on the ice.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, or you can turn around and send them in a deal that brings a Phil Kessel back. So, I mean, you know, you that's what I like. And yes, Dean Lombardi is a guy who built the Los Angeles Kings into a perennial powerhouse, a team that won multiple Stanley Cups. I love that about him. But there were also some tremendous mistakes that LA made.
You had
over
that
the
whole
time.
With Mike Richards situation.
The Mike Richards situation. I mean, he handled it
the
right way by getting
Slava Voynov situation.
Yes, and you know, and plus he put them in cap hell. Also, I mean, he signed some really bad contracts. And handcuffed them, you know, towards the end because he wanted to continue on, mm-hmm. you know, that reign of being in the Cup Finals and winning additional
of course,
cups
yeah.
and whatever. So, I mean, I like – there are good and bad things about Dean Lombardi. I don't think that I would be – I would object to hiring a Fitzgerald or a Guerin because, you know, of where they come from. I mean, Buffalo did it. They hired Jason Botterill and, you know, I don't – you know, he's, you know, obviously way too soon to tell, but
– yeah.
You know, I mean, there are teams that are going in that direction, but I don't think anyone was going to jump on the Carolina GM deal because I think that, you know, there are these future GMs that are looking and saying, hey, there's going to be a bunch of jobs open. I'm not going to tie myself down until I see everything that's available.
I think New York looks a lot more attractive.
Absolutely,
than Carolina.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the and listen, you could say whatever you want about Garth Snow, but he's going to give whoever is going to take his job is going to be in an enviable position because, I mean, other than the John Tavares thing, but you have Barzal in place, you have. You know, you have some really good pieces to move if you want to, you know, improve
absolutely.
The team right away. You're obviously going to have some cap space. You got some dead, you know, money coming off of the cap. And you're going to have two lottery picks, two picks in the top 15, and then, you know, two picks in the second round as well. So, you know, you got four picks in the top 60 players. Whoever takes over is going to have a lot to work with.
And like I said to Dan, the team going into this year wasn't that far away from being a team that can make some noise. It's just a matter of adding to it. And you push some of those prospects back down into Bridgeport where they belong. Get a goalie. Easier said than done. Mm-hmm. But get a damn goalie. You know, and you round out the bottom six. And you know what? maybe a new when the new GM comes in, they give a guy like Josh Hosang a clean slate.
That's
and that guy makes the team out of camp. And, you know, maybe all of a sudden you got another you know, guy who we've already seen, you know, is going to be able to, you know, produce offense. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right.
Like, yeah, I think I said it, you know, maybe last week or the week before. Like, I definitely do like the idea of a new guy coming in, not having any loyalties to any of these guys, not having any sort of, well,
right.
you know, I brought this guy along, I drafted him, I got to, you know what I mean? Just he just comes in and he assesses the situation, says, I'm going to do what's best for this franchise.
Right.
And he
right.
just makes whatever moves that he has.
But
to
that's
make.
What Brendan Shanahan did in Toronto, because there were a lot of these old time guys who kept hanging on and they had their favorites and this and that and whatever. And then it just it kept kind of just turning over from one to the other. It was guys who were familiar and that, you know, they you know, there was like a power struggle there until they realized that they needed somebody at the top that was going to come in and make, you know, just wholesale changes. And that's exactly what Shanahan did. He came in, he hired Lamoriello.
And he brought in Lou Lamoriello, which is pretty damn impressive.
Exactly.
Too,
but he
know?
Brought in a guy who he knew that he could just, he, you know, you were in charge of this. I need someone who I can trust in charge of this.
Yep.
And then hired a bunch of analytical guys that changed the entire way that they do business around in Toronto. And look what they did in 3 years. They were able to completely, you know, take their roster, which was talent, you know, talent barren at some point, and then look at, you know, you look at the riches that they have now with these, you know, these guys that they have. They, I mean, you know, you have some of the top young players in the game. Yeah, I mean, they're a little short on defensive prospects, but I mean, you know, that's eventually that's going to right the ship there too.
Yeah,
it's, you know, they got Freddie Anderson, which, you know, people were a little concerned about that, but I mean, he's turned out to be, you know, very, very solid for them. Looks like he's going to have, you know, he's going to go on to, you know, to be there and be solid for them for a long time. But that's what I think the Islanders need to do. They need to come in, put a guy at the top of this whole thing, and just clean it out.
Do you
start fresh?
Pat LaFontaine could be that guy.
I have been clamoring for Pat LaFontaine to do it for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's got ties to the dynasty. He's got ties
now,
to the
organization. Now in a Shanahan role or as a general manager,
needs to be a Shanahan.
Okay.
I would love to see LaFontaine come in and then hire one of these young GMs to work underneath him. Hmm. That's what I would like to see. I would like to see LaFontaine be Brendan Shanahan with the New York Islanders. That's what I would like. He would be the president of hockey operations. He'd be the figurehead. He'd be the guy who everyone goes to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, look, really, in all seriousness, you know, Shanahan's the guy. You know, he does the interviews. You know, Lou does his little bit here and there, but that's not Lou's strong point. You always know that. Lou's a behind-the-scenes guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is – you need to have a guy out front and be the face of this thing. And Pat is that guy. He
Even
should
despite
be in
the nonsense
NHL.
That happened in Buffalo?
I don't go by any of that. I think that the I don't know the whole story behind that. I know the ownership there at the time when, you know, he came in was a little bit in shambles, and they've done some really wacky things here and there also.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really go by that. And the thing with Charles, I throw out the window because, you know, that between the Neil Smith thing and Pat leaving, and like I said before, I think that was Pat's recommendation, and then Charles was going against it, and Pat says, well, why am I here if you're going to go against what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's what happened.
And then
that.
He left. So, you know, the fact that LaFontaine has been in the building, the fact that he's, you know, he's done some things with the Islanders is a big thing, because he didn't do that for a long time with Charles. And to see that, you know, Ledecky has obviously done a really nice job. We talked about this last week, you know, reaching out to the alumni.
Mm-hmm.
To having these guys in the building, making them feel welcome.
Right.
And I would not be surprised if that conversation has taken place, without a doubt. I mean, you know, it's been reported that they spoke with him. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah, I would love to see Pat LaFontaine be that guy, to be the guy who, you know, who they bring in to kind of right the ship here. And he would revel in that, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that would be awesome. I mean, the question is, the only thing is for us is we just don't know who the hell is going to be the right guy. We just got to hope that whoever they do pick is and knows what they're doing, and they do make the right decisions. Because, I mean, you know, some of it is a crapshoot. You know, if they hire Bill Guerin, if they hire Tom Fitzgerald, if they hire Pat LaFontaine, you know, or Dean Lombardi, you know, we don't know which one of those guys is going to be the right guy for the job. Hopefully with whatever, homework they're doing right now on these guys that they're talking to leads to making the most educated choice, and, you know, hopefully it ends up turning things around. Because, you know, again, like Dan was saying, and he's absolutely right, the culture once and for all with this franchise finally needs to be changed.
Yes.
And, you know, it's interesting. You know, we did discuss this, you know, part of things last week with the whole ownership thing and how some people were already giving owners a hard time. We were like, hey, hold on, chill out a second. I really do think that those two guys hold the key to that. And I think,
mm-hmm.
as when it comes to that, they started at the very top with, you know, where – you know, where the home address for this team is going to be. I think that was priority number one.
And they did it. And
box, that box is checked, right?
Yep.
So now it's time to trickle that down closer and closer to on ice. And the next is, you know, whether you have a president of hockey operations or not, you know, if you're going straight to GM, whatever. But that's the next step. And I really think these guys, you know, are going to do that. I think they've given us, you know, every reason to believe that this is going to be a cap-stealing team every season. They'll spend on a GM. They'll spend on a coach. I don't think they're going to be looking to pinch pennies anywhere like Wong was. See,
just look at the coaching staff they put together. I mean, that's a big coaching staff.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, you know, I finally, that stuff isn't really going to be a concern. So with that in mind, and, you know, I'm taking their absolute word for it that they want a winner. They want to win for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that in mind, like, that's where it starts, changing the culture. Bring in a completely new regime who has nothing to do with all the effing nonsense that has gone on over the past, whatever, 5, 10, 15, 12, 20 years,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it. You know, and finally just bring in people that are going to be like, look, this is how it's going to be. This is what we're doing. No more, you know, circus franchise. No more of that stuff. And finally it's going to be a franchise to be taken seriously. And as has been pointed out in this show previously, when you hear about people around the league, you know, whether they're working for other teams or whether they're in the media, they've always had nothing but glowing things to say about these new owners. These guys do business. These guys want a winner.
Yep.
And I believe it. I think they're going to do it. Maybe it's taken longer for some fans than you'd like, but I really think, you know, that's finally going to happen, and it's going to happen this summer. And you know what? If they don't do anything about it this summer, then everything I just said goes completely out the window.
Well,
and then
have a big problem on their hands.
Because like Dan said too, if and we said it as well, if this front office comes back next year, I don't have any hope. My hope is gone. It's finished.
If this front office comes back next year, they're going to do severe, if not irreparable, damage to this team in the eyes of the fans. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. It's not giving in to the fans. You know,
unless Garth Snow has the draft of his life. You know, the end of June comes and he picks up Erik Karlsson, he gets Dolan number one. You know, like how else are fans even going to give Garth Snow a shadow of a chance next year unless he just pulls 18 rabbits out of his hat on draft weekend? That's the only way.
Tavares, a top prospect, and Erik Karlsson may quiet the masses, but I mean that's nearly impossible.
Right. Well, this
I mean,
is
that's
what I'm saying.
Nearly impossible.
This,
I mean, you'd have
do you
to
really
be
trust
David
him to do that?
Field in order to
right.
pull something
exactly.
like that.
Right. Exactly. So that's what I mean. Like, you know, if they give him the chance to do that, it's not gonna. And look, anybody who may even have a shred of interest in getting season tickets for next year, they're sure as shit gonna wait until after July 1st.
Oh, absolutely, bro. Listen, man, I always said from the minute that the Coliseum that there was the rumor that they were gonna go back to the Coliseum that I was gonna get tickets. I was gonna, you know, whatever. There was a package. There was this. There was that. I was gonna
save your money. Wait it out.
But I'll tell you right now, I haven't even called my ticket rep because I won't.
Why
I won't
would you?
Do it until I know what the hell is going on.
Right.
I want to know what's going on, and there's no way that I'm renewing or doing anything.
Yeah.
Anything. Before I have an idea of what the direction of this franchise is. And right now, status quo is not a direction because, I mean, right now, and I think you'll agree with me, that this is like going to hell in a handbasket at this point. I mean,
and some people say, you know, as far as coaching goes, a guy, you got to give a coach more than 1 year, you know, before you – sorry, but it's just, look, I've been saying it a million times. I like Doug Weight, but – the way this season went and the way that they just haven't been able to adjust to the barrage of chances.
He's lost. He's lost.
It's tough to watch him.
He's
it's
lost.
Tough to watch his press conferences. It really
Bro,
is.
And this
it
is
sucks,
a guy who is mesmerizing the media. We were like, oh, I love Waite's comments.
What a breath of fresh air.
What a breath
he's
of
such
fresh
an intelligent
air.
Guy.
Sounds
he gives
great.
You really good answers.
Knows exactly how to deal with the media. And this year, he's fucking lost.
No. He was all of that. Until about December 1st.
Yeah, and then
or whatever it was. Once they started tailspinning, it got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Because he has no answers. We've learned that. There's been enough time for us to determine this guy and his staff, unfortunately, have no answers for what's happened this season. And yes, he can point up to Garth Snow and say, can I get a little fucking help down here?
Yes.
But at the end of the day, he hasn't been able to adjust. And
But let me ask you a question.
If you're going to clean out the GM, you got to let the new guy pick his staff anyway. So if Garth goes, Doug goes.
Oh, they all have to go. But this is. But honestly, and answer this, and you know, you tell me what you think. Isn't this too talented of a roster for him to be completely clueless like this?
Well, yes, that's what
I mean.
I've been
this
saying.
Is way too much talent for him to be standing up there, shrugging his shoulders, like, "Well, we lost 7-4, but I don't know how the fuck we lost." What, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
How can you possibly tell me that? You waited 9 weeks in order to make the defensive structural changes when you're giving up 50 shots a game, 3-4 games in a row like that. You're like, hey,
yeah,
we need to change this up.
And look, it's a combination, right? Because we discussed at length with Dan the lack of experience on the blue line and all these young guys that the team is depending on, which obviously shouldn't be happening. That's more a Garth thing. But even still, I think, you know, a coach worth his salt can find a way to coach those guys into a system
something that's
going to prevent 50 shots a game.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there's got to be a balance.
They have
just not
broken
there.
Every single stupid 50-shot record that there was in existence since they started tracking shots. This is the worst team when it comes to shots.
And there you have it,
Tony,
because there have been much worse teams that have come in and out of the NHL over the past however many years, right? And they didn't even give up this many shots.
Exactly.
You can point to the inexperience on defense as much as you want, but you know that rests on unfortunately for Doug, it rests on his shoulders and the rest of the staff, without question.
No question.
So, again, it's just clean it out. Clean it all out. Bring something new in. And look, Dougie's a guy who I wouldn't mind keeping around with the franchise in some other capacity. There can be positive to having him in the organization. And I think you maybe even see that if a guy like Bill Guerin takes the job, because they're so tight, they're good buddies. You know, maybe Doug Weight gets some kind of position that's away
goes
from the coaching
staff. Goes
back to
being assistant GM.
Okay, yeah. You know, and he's not making the final decision. So would I be completely against having Doug Weight as the assistant GM? No, as long as Bill Guerin is making, you know, or whoever is making the decisions at the end of the
day.
Fine.
Right.
You know, I don't mind Doug Weight, you know, making suggestions here and there and saying, take a look at this guy or whatever. That's fine. But you gotta take him out of the coaching seat. You just gotta fill all the seats with somebody new.
Well, I mean, whatever general manager you do hire, he has to make his own decisions. He's gotta decide.
Exactly.
Listen, if he comes and he wants Doug Weight, I don't think that there's any way that's gonna be the case. But I mean, whoever you hire has got to hire his own staff.
Yeah.
Plain and simple, from start to finish.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. You wanna take a break, buddy?
Yeah, we
take
should.
A break? Okay.
Yeah,
we'll take a break.
I feel like my head's
all right. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York, part of the Hockey Active Radio Network. Remember, you can always tune in live or for the archives at RadioHockeyActive.com. We'll be right back.
If you're interested in exposing your business on an exciting new platform to a great audience of potential new customers or clients, then advertise right here on the Hockey Active Radio Network. Reach thousands of listeners every week on our entire radio, social, and online network. Competitive, affordable sponsorships are available now. Contact sales at hockeyactive.com. That's sales at hockeyactive.com. Introduce your business or services to the coolest fans in the world. In need of solid online solutions for your business or service? Then contact Island Web Media today for all your hosting, branding, web design, social, and multimedia needs. With over 15 years of experience in the industry and on top of all the latest trends and platforms, you will get the answers that you need. Island Web Media is an American company based in Long Island, New York. Go to islandwebmedia.com today. That's islandwebmedia.com. The Hockey Active Radio Network is powered by Hockey Active LLC in Long Island, New York. Hockey Active is always looking for good people to join us as we expand our audience reach and network services. If you have digital, video, social media, and sales skills, go to hockeyactive.com today. Call or send us an email and see how you can get involved with an exciting new company covering the coolest game on earth. Once again, that's hockeyactive.com. I see a dead, empty face, high behind your
Oh, welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. In case you forgot, you listen to Hockey Night in New York, part of the Hockey Active Radio Network. Thanks for sticking with us and listening to our gripes and grievances and anger that has been brought forth by the actions and performance of the New York Islanders, their coaching staff, and their general manager. It's been tough, and you know, it's funny because you know, to be completely straight with you guys, you know, we go to the break and I go to Tony, I go, where do we go from here, man? I'm like, what do you want to talk about next? Because what else is there to talk about, right? I mean, you know, they're doing what they're doing on the ice. They're giving up goals left and right. They're giving up shots left and right. You know, it's a tough watch at this point. I give anybody credit who's still tuning into games because, you know, when you know it's really only for pride and you know, where they eventually fall at the standings, it's tough. So, you know, Tony, I guess, you know, broaden out to the league a little bit here before we wrap things up. The Seattle expansion franchise is getting a lot of steam, a lot of subscribers on the season ticket situation. I believe they had to cut it off.
Outpacing Vegas.
Yes, that's correct. They outpaced Vegas.
Yeah.
Looks like there's a lot of excitement up there. And, you know, it's obviously happening. Going to be interesting to see, you know, it's always exciting to see what the team name is going to be and the jerseys and the name and all that.
Tim Leiwicki's brother is actually left the who is he working for? He was working for the NBA or the NFL. Left his position to go and basically front this ownership group, this group now that's going to be the franchise, the expansion group that's looking to bring the team there. So, as you know, the Oakview Group, which is partnered with Ledecky and Malkin on
yes.
the Belmont thing, is actually partnered as well with the arena plans and with the expansion group up there. So, you know, it's going to come to
it's happening.
It's going to happen.
It's happening. What is it? The 2021 season, I think, is what they have targeted.
It's probably because this is the same path that Vegas took is the same thing. They had the ticket sales first, and then they announced the fact that they're going to get it, and then there's a year after that,
and they're going to get at least the same expansion draft scenario that Vegas got.
I'm sure they'll make some changes in that.
Basically, from what I've read, and this isn't exactly new news, but, you know, Seattle's basically like, look, we peddled all this money. We're putting up all this money for our team. We want at least as good of a situation as Vegas had, you know, for the expansion. So I'm sure that'll happen. But I think the most interesting and newest wrinkle to come out of, you know, the talk of Seattle being added to the league and now eventually having 32 teams and having it even finally is there's been talk of the potential of expanding the playoffs.
I heard this.
There's been some chatter, you know, in the media about what the league might want to do, what GMs have chimed in on and what they might want to do. So I guess, you know, to close things out, we'll just talk a little bit about that. I don't like the idea of adding more teams to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I think 16 is perfect. Half the teams make it, half don't.
Right.
And the only thing is, get rid of this wild card format. Just go back to 1-8, 2-7, yada, yada. I mean, you know.
It's too confusing.
Well, forget about confusing. It just seems completely unnecessary. And, yeah, you know, they had intentions of, you know, trying to liven up rivalries and stuff like that. And, yeah, I get
it. They've taken away from that. I mean, when it was the old Patrick division, I mean, when I was a kid, it seemed like the Islanders and the Washington Capitals played in the playoffs every single year. And those series were fantastic. You got the Easter epic from that. And you got some of these great – and it carried over to the regular season.
And, Tony, it made more sense back then because there were less teams in the league. So you played your division rivals a lot more often
right.
during the regular season.
Right, right.
But now because it's so spread out, you're going to have 32 teams. And assuming they make changes, every team has to play – every team in the other conference at least twice, once home, once away. And you're really spreading out the amount of games that you can even possibly play against your division rival. So what's the point of forcing the teams to even have to, you know, work through their own division, you know, in the playoffs? And the stupid thing about it is when the wild card comes in the picture, you end up with a chance of having a team from the other division coming into yours anyway. So just scrap it. Go back to, you know, 1-8. You know, have the division winners
but
be the 1-2 or the 3 if maybe they split up the divisions now. I don't know. But, you know, have them take the top two seeds and then just go down the list like they used to. You know, because you have good teams. you know, getting bounced out in the first round, playing against teams they shouldn't have even been playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just go back to the 1-8, you know?
No, I agree with you. I liked it. I'm a more traditionalist when it comes to the playoffs. You know, the NHL playoffs.
For the love of God, bring back the division names. The Smythe, the Norris,
that.
The Adams, the Patch. I mean, those were awesome. Bring them back.
They were, absolutely. I mean, that's what everyone, when they were going to rename the divisions, that's when everyone was hoping that they were going to go
finally,
back.
Yeah, finally, right?
And then they were saying, oh, we'll just update them. You know, it'll be the Gretzky and the Orr.
Fine.
It's
unique, and it's better than just picking stupid regions. And then especially you get the Metro, right?
The
I mean, that's not
terrible.
Even a region.
The Metro is terrible. Yeah, Carolina is in the Metro.
I mean,
division.
It sounds cool. I'll give them that.
There's
but
nothing Metro about the Carolinas, all right? I mean, people go to the Carolinas to get away from the Metropolitan. So.
Right.
But listen, I mean, I agree. I really like. I always liked the way it was 1-8-2, you know, 2-7-3-6-4-5. That was the way to do it. You don't have to convince me about the names of the divisions. I've been clamoring for that for years. I would love to see it go back to being the Patrick Division. And you know, honestly, that was really the best. It was the best way of going about it. You know, you played your division rivals. You had to get through your division to get to the conference finals, and that was the way to go, man. That was
back then.
Yeah, then, and that's that. I mean,
but now I don't think that works. Going through, no, I'm saying the names, yes, but not having to go through your division. I'm saying, you know, if the eighth, if you're the first seed and the eighth seed happens to be in the other division.
Oh, the conference you're talking about.
Yeah. Because this whole nonsense of, you know, doing the 1-4-2-3 within division, and the four can possibly be from the other division. And you know, you look at situations where, you know, the 2-3 in one division, you know, probably shouldn't end up lining up against each other in the first round.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
right.
You can have, you know, a lack of balance where one division is much better than the other, mm-hmm. you know, and the teams that aren't as good are benefiting from that, from essentially avoiding, you know, maybe the more powerful teams in the other division. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. I like the idea of doing it the way that, you know, that we're talking about. You know,
yeah.
It's just, you know, you come at the top of the conference, you should play the team at the bottom, you know, the last playoff team. I mean,
yes.
It's just, it's
yes.
It's kind of the whole idea of being the best team. You know, there
right.
should be some type of, you know, in the NFL, they do a bye week. I mean, you know, they don't have to play in the first round of the playoffs if you're
it,
in the top
it really
of the
affects
league, so.
The 2-3 seeds. That's where the problem really lies.
Yeah. It's
when
just,
you have those 2-3 teams playing each other. Because the one will play the 8 one way or the other. But it's when you get into the 2-3 in each division, you know, those guys – you know, it kind of becomes imperfect then because, you know, while one team might be a 3 seed in their own division, they may be, who knows, 6 overall.
Right,
conference,
right.
Something like
exactly.
that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I agree with you. I wish, you know, again, like I said, I'm more of a traditionalist when it came. There was nothing wrong with the playoff structure. I don't know why they decided that they wanted to change it.
Yeah.
You know, start calling it wild cards and this and that. The top 8 teams in the conference make the playoffs. It's not a wild card format. It should just be the best 8 teams in the conference make the playoffs. That's it. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. That's the way it should be, and it should be structured that way. You know, that's the way it worked for 97 years of the NHL. I don't see why we had to go down this road.
Well, whatever the case may be. But,
no.
Yeah, so I guess that'll be interesting to see what happens when the Seattle franchise comes in. Tony, I have to say, man, I'm kind of at a lack for words here. I don't think I got much left.
No.
You got something you want to cover before
we
wrap it up earlier.
I'm just looking at the NHL as a whole right now.
Is there any Sound Tigers news, maybe, that we can talk about? You know, we haven't done a Bridgeport roundup in a long time. You used to do that.
Let me bring the numbers
Tony
up.
Tony on the farm?
We never really named that Sound
I think
Tigers
we had
report
something.
Thing, did we?
Yeah, it was. We haven't done it in a while.
I'm just going to bring it up because I mean,
Dan was saying they're even in danger of missing the playoffs down there. So I mean, that gives us an idea what's going on. I haven't been keeping tabs on Hosang down there. I'm not sure what the latest.
Well, he was out for a while. He was sick, and then he got back into the lineup, but. He has not had a great year. I'm bringing it up here now. Hold on. Bridgeport. Here we are. I hate the AHL website. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I do. No, it's just it used to be where you can just bring it up. Okay, so Josh Hosang in 39 games has 7 goals, 18 assists, and 25 points. He's a -1.
Okay.
Let's see. Travis St. Denis now is the leader in points. He finally passed Tanner Fritz. Fritz had 37 points in 33 games. It took Travis Saint-Denis 62 games to get to point number 37.
Okay, it's a bit longer.
Yeah, just a little bit. Michael Dukole is 54 games. His numbers are not good at all.
Yeah.
7 goals, 17 assists. He's a minus 10.
Yeah.
So that's not good. Kyle Burrows is Kyle Burrows is having a nice year. 63
okay.
games, 23 points. He's a plus 14.
Okay.
So Devin Toews was having a great year before he went down with the injury. Parker Wotherspoon had a hat trick the other night. He has 7 goals now in 48 games.
Okay.
Let's see. Mitchell Van Sample's had a nice season. 23 points, 46 games. He's only a minus 6. This is a guy who's not really known for his defense. So. That's a good thing. The goaltending was really the talk of Bridgeport this year.
That's
something
we can discuss really quickly. Is the Chris Gibson dream was pretty much destroyed on Thursday.
That
huh?
came crashing down now, didn't it?
Yes.
5 goals on 12 shots.
Yeah. So well, you know, it's good that we got to see that.
They were all five weren't. It wasn't like he was, you know, I mean, at the bench while they were scoring these goals.
Right,
I mean,
right,
you know,
right.
I mean, you know, we have no, you know, preconceived notions about what this, you know, this team is going to be doing in front of these guys. So, and he
fair.
Stopped 50 shots in the game before. So
yeah, that's true. Also
and that was
fair.
That was the biggest game of the year, by the way. I just want you to know the Calgary game. That's
you did say that last week.
That was a big game. So
yeah.
I mean, Gibson, you know, had a great goals against average, 2.31 goals against this year. He had only a 9.10 save percentage. So you know, be that what it may. Godlevsky is. Got a under 900 save percentage and a 2.76 goals against average, so that's not working out so the way they liked it. Let's see, all goalies now. I think Eamon McAdam has played a little bit down there, if I'm not mistaken.
How's Kiefer Sutherland Bellows doing?
Kiefer Bellows has actually he's been fantastic actually. I think he had up to 36 or 37 goals. I'm bringing him up right now.
Okay.
Prospects.
Bring him up.
Okay, so Kiefer Bellows right now, he has eclipsed the 40-goal mark.
Nice.
55 games with the Portland Winterhawks. He has 40 goals, 33 assists, 73 points. He's a plus 41. He's had 63 penalty minutes. And in the World Juniors, he scored 9 goals in 7 games. So in 63 games this year, he's got 49 goals and 83 points.
That sounds really nice.
Yeah.
That
so
good.
We will definitely be getting a look at Kiefer Bellows next September. There's pretty much no question that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think this World Junior, this him going to the WHL was a huge success for him.
Yeah, it seems to have definitely been the right decision. Definitely
mm-hmm.
seems like... it's working out, so that's some great news, especially when you see a guy like Dal Cole struggling so much in Bridgeport. At least maybe this is a guy who can let's face it, he already has leaped him in, as far as the prospect list goes. But
yeah, I think other than Devin Toews, you know, Kiefer Bellows has got to be pretty much your top prospect at this point. I mean,
right.
you know, after seeing, you know, I mean, you were a little concerned after he only had 7 goals at Boston at BU last year.
Right.
But he played really well in the gold medal game at the World Juniors. I think he scored the tying goal, if I'm not mistaken, in that game. And then going on to World Juniors this year, he scores, like I said, 9 goals in the tournament, which is fantastic. And then he has a 40-goal season under his belt now. So, yeah, he's definitely taken a step forward. You know,
future's bright, man.
Yeah, and he's a power forward, which is really, you know, they don't really have that on this team.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Anders Lee, and he's, you know, kind of gone away from that, you know, a little bit more. He's kind of more of a net presence now and not, you know, kind of smashing around in the corners. Bellows is a guy who does not shy away from contact. He's, you know, he's...
I like to hear that.
Yeah, and he's solid, you know. Like, he's, I don't even know what he is. He's 200 pounds at 6 foot already.
Okay.
I mean, he's 19 years old, so...
he's a big boy.
Yeah, he is. He'll be 20 in June. So,
so
I think we'll get a better look at him. He's got to get a new number, but other than that, he's you know, he's wearing his dad's number.
Right,
so.
right.
But you know, he's gonna have to pick another number. But other than that, you want a bright spot. There's one, and then there's Ilya Sorokin. I mean, have you heard about Ilya Sorokin?
Tell me about him,
bro.
Dude,
this guy is. He's playing. They're playing. First of all, if you haven't already, you have to. I got to get the story for you. But basically, the KHL has rigged the entire year that this one team will win the championship.
I read
right?
that.
Yes, it's crazy. I read
there was
this. I was reading
Twitter
this
thread
BS,
about that.
Slava.
It's still more of like this guy's theory than fact.
But
it sounds pretty good.
It sounds pretty solid.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're playing in a series now, right? This kid has 5 shutouts in 6 games.
Wow.
They have scored 1 goal against in 6 games against Ilya Sorokin.
Wow. Wow.
I don't care what league you're playing in.
That's
damn near unheard of.
But, Tony, that is awesome, and it's all well and good, but is the guy going to come over to the States? Is he coming over to North America?
Well, you see, this is
the question.
And this is the other portion of it, is that we don't know what the situation is. The contracts over there, they're not straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they sign a quote-unquote extension, but they have an out clause because if they sign for a couple more years, they get a higher rate of salary. Everyone knows the reason why he went back this year was because he wanted to play in the Olympics. He ended up doing that. He got his gold medal. So now is he going to stay over there, or is he going to want – he's already said he wants to come over. You know, there is no question that he wants to play in the NHL. The question is whether or not he's going to do it this year, or is it going to be 2 years after because of the contract extension. But this guy is – his numbers are like jaw-dropping over there. I mean,
yeah.
They really are. I don't – you know, and you look at guys like Kovalchuk and Datsyuk and whatever. I mean, I think they're all pretty much on the same team, if I'm not mistaken. That's why that was part of this whole, theory of them stacking the whole league.
Right.
But, I mean, there are some really good NHL players over there, and this guy is stoning, especially in this series. I mean, he's been doing it for years. He's got over 930 save percentage the last couple of years.
Awesome.
And it was over 940, I think, 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
But, you know, the whole thing is that this guy can play. He is probably a couple of guys I've read have said this, that he is the best goaltender not playing in the NHL right now. So, it's we're just going to have to see. I mean, I think I read someplace that the team is not allowed to buy out his contract. The player has to. And that's a part of the problem because signing his ECL, he's not going to get a real solid money deal for an entry level contract in order to cover what's going to cost. So we'll have to see how that whole thing plays out.
Right.
But Ilya Sorokin's a guy who you really want to get over here as soon as possible.
Well, folks, I think that's just about going to do it. I'm just looking at the schedule here. The Islanders have 10 games left. 7 of them are going to be at home. So, you know, if you're really a glass half full sort of individual, that means you have 7 more chances to see John Tavares in an Islander jersey before the season is over. So, and I'm sure, you can get in the building for about $6 at this point on StubHub. So if you want to get in and see Johnny before he potentially leaves, you got 7 opportunities to do so. They got Pittsburgh, Tampa, and Chicago coming in this week before we do the show on Sunday. So that'll be fun to watch, I'm sure. But we're gonna ride out the string here, folks. We'll be back next week. We'll be off the following week because of the Easter Sunday holiday, and then we'll be back for at least one more to wrap things up at the end of the season. So, folks, keep your heads up high, keep your chins up. We're going to get through this, and hopefully, we get through these next few weeks and bigger things ahead this summer. Thanks for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York. Big thanks to Dan Saraceni for joining us and talking some miles with us. And thanks to you. don't forget, you can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Stabile, myself at Shawnee Hockey, and the show at Hockey Night NY. We're going to end it here. For Tony Stabile, I'm Sean Cuthbert. Have yourselves a great night. Like a dancer.